Here the Turtle is presented by Toyota. Toyota helps you get the most out of your drive. Just ask a friend who drives one. Shop buyatoyota.com, Toyota's official website for deals, to find the Toyota that's right for you. Toyota, let's go places. Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. It's Hear the Turtle presented by Toyota and Keith. For weeks, we have been talking Maryland men's basketball record breakers. But that's not the only basketball team that's coming back into action in a few weeks. The Maryland women's team starts a very, very special season. The 50th season of Maryland women's basketball. It's funny, over the last 3 years, we've had the 125th season of Maryland football. We've had the 100th season of Maryland basketball. And now we have the 50th season of Maryland women's basketball. And throughout the year, we will be bringing on all of the legends that we can get a hold of to talk about the storied history of Maryland women's basketball, which I think for a lot of people starts in 2006 with the national title. And that's fair, but there is so much even before that. And a great person to talk about all of it is Christy Winter Scott, former standout for the Terps in the late 80s, and now a fantastic analyst on BTN. You might see her on NBC Sports Washington talking Mystics and Wizards. Christy is just sensational. She's at the Xfinity Center all the time calling our games for BTN. And she had such a good perspective, Keith, on the early days of the program and then through towards this Brenda Freeze era where she's now able to observe as an analyst. Pretty cool perspective for our first interview about the 50th season of Maryland women's basketball.
I mean, there's not many people we could have brought on better to kick off our 50th anniversary of Maryland women's basketball series than Christy Winter Scott. I mean, just a fantastic interview. One of the longest ones I feel like we've ever done. I feel like we could have gone a full 3 hours with Christy, just with the stories and insight and just all the information and things that she knows about this program and her own personal career, which I think she's got some awesome stories too that a lot of Maryland fans might not know. And also, I think we had another first in the history of this Hear the Turtle podcast. The other first being you recording from your shower, which we talked about last week. But second being, Taylor, you made a guest cry. You made Christy Winter Scott cry on this podcast. Yes. And I don't want to give it away of when it comes in the interview or whatnot. They were happy tears, but you did make a guest cry.
Look, I am just one to get the emotions out of people. And that's just, no. It was just it really spoke to, and you're right, we won't give too much of it away. It just spoke to how much Christy Winter Scott cares about Maryland and the program. That is what elicited those tears. You know, I was phrasing the question, but and honestly, it was kind of a beautiful thing because obviously Christy went and played here. You and I went here and now work here. And there is certainly something special. And I'm sure that most of the people listening to probably went to Maryland too. There's something special about Maryland that is sometimes hard to quantify for people. And in Christy's own personal experience, being a recruit, being there, and now being back around, I think that's all kind of came to a head for her when she was giving the answer she gave to me. And that elicited that emotion. And it was pretty cool to see and really confirmed that she was the right guest to bring on to give people a look back and an emotional connection. If you're not a big women's basketball fan or you don't know a ton about the history of the program, you almost care more about it just by listening to how Christy Winter Scott describes her experience in the program, playing at Maryland, and now being around the program after. So a fantastic interview with her. As we said, she talks about all the three coaches in Maryland women's basketball history, Dottie McKnight, Chris Well, and Brenda Freeze, in such great terms. Prayed for Chris, now watches Coach Freeze, obviously, now. She talked about her kids a little bit, which was fun, who play basketball, and her experience overseas playing professionally, which I thought was really really cool to hear, and speaks to the experience that a lot of these women's basketball players have now playing in the WNBA and then going overseas. So it's awesome stuff from Christy Winter Scott. Let's not waste any more time and let's hear from her. Want to take the Terrapins with you wherever you go? Maryland Athletics has officially launched the One Maryland mobile app, a must-have for all Terps fans. The One Maryland app is a one-stop shop for all things Terps, featuring the latest news, scores, game day information, and exclusive content from your favorite Maryland teams. Download the One Maryland app on your iOS or Android device today by searching for Maryland Athletics in your device's app store. We're back here on Hear the Turtle with Maryland women's basketball. Christy Winter Scott, I'm going to use the word legend for you. And analyst extraordinaire, Christy Winter Scott. Christy, thanks for coming on. First of all, we're here to sort of kick off what will be a series for us about the 50th season of Maryland women's basketball. When I say that to you, that it's the 50th season, what does that kind of bring to you? What memories does that bring back for you?
Oh man, everything. Because I tell you what, when I got to Maryland, like I just thought it was always there. I thought the program had always been there. I think, you know, as years go on, you understand the history behind women's basketball as a whole, but also at the University of Maryland, I think Chris Weller, my coach, and I coached with her as an assistant for five seasons as well. But I think she did a really fantastic job of sharing the history. And I think we, along the way of those 4 years, I think we discovered a lot from what she shared. So I didn't know it was 50 years though until recently, which is, you know, that's just mind blowing. And to know that I was there, you know, 30 years ago, that's hard to say, obviously. But it doesn't even seem like that should be like a mark, you know, it just seems like it has always been like that. It's always been there.
Now, I feel like a lot of people's history with this program starts in 06, and rightfully so, national championship. But there's so much history before that as well. A lot of it that you were a part of, going to a Final Four, a couple ACC championships. When you were here, what was it like sort of breaking into that national stage and under Coach Weller, had so much success when she was here?
Yeah, you know, it was really fantastic. I think, again, Coach Weller did a really good job of bringing those players back to scrimmage against us, like Tara Heiss, who was an Olympian, Jazz Perazic. They would come back and just give us the absolute blues in practice. And it was just a lot of fun. And they would tell us all the stories about, you know, when they were playing in the AIAW and, you know, just the history and the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the van. And, you know, it wasn't like a chartered flight with food prepared. It's just leaps and bounds ahead of what it used to be in terms of respect, in terms of budget. So I think just the stories that they came back to tell us and, you know, the game that they came back to show us is a testament to just the overall success of the program and just to be a part of, you know, a little piece of the puzzle during my 4 year tenure and to go to a Final Four. I mean, you kind of take it for granted because you want that to be a goal every year and it should be a goal every year, but you realize the further and further you get away from it, you realize how special and unique that moment actually was, you know, to be one of four teams left out of over 300 teams. And, you know, when I was playing anyway, I didn't look at it that way. I just wanted to win, you know, and I don't even know what seed we went into the tournament that year, but I know we were 28-2 going into the Final Four. I know that. And I know, you know, we played the 9 o'clock game to punch our ticket to the Final Four. And we were the last team to do it. So of the four teams that season. So, I mean, there are a lot of great memories, but I just think that, you know, just understanding now, being so far removed from it, understanding now how special it was, it you know, every year, it's just, you know, there's a lot more to cherish as the years go by. It's just like, you know, it's very unique and defining moment in my life for sure.
Christy, you've mentioned Chris Weller a couple times. What was it like to play for Chris? And it almost kind of what was her pitch to get you to come to Maryland, or what attracted you to Maryland? What kind of about Coach Weller made you feel like this is the person I want to play for and develop under?
Well, she was a winner. And I think as a competitor, you want to win. And they had just won the ACC tournament the year before I got there, and they weren't expected to win it. But I remember she told us, she was a great storyteller, obviously, but she said she overheard, I think, the Washington Post writer calling in the score, and he actually flipped it and said that Maryland had lost. And, you know, I think she corrected him, like, no, make sure you get the score right. Like, we actually won. It was like a blowout, like 80-something, 50-something. It was like a major blowout in the championship game. And they just weren't expected to win it that year. And the fact that they kind of blew the doors off of the tournament that season, I wanted to play with players who knew how to grind it out and win it. So, you know, we won back-to-back ACC tournament championships, and it was not easy, but boy, I'll never forget the grind of that, the ice baths. But she didn't have to do that much convincing for me, because I think I took visits to other schools and, you know, I just felt like I wasn't myself at the other schools. I couldn't like giggle as much as I wanted to. I mean, it's, I know it sounds so trivial, but I couldn't like not be reserved. You know, I think I was reserved every other place, and I got to Maryland and it was just the spirit at the football game, the spirit at the games. We, you know, we went to practice and saw the underbelly of what they did all day, going to classes and being on campus. So I think, you know, the school and the spirit of the school, the soul of the school, I think sold me on Maryland. And Coach Weller, I mean, obviously the offer was there, but she didn't have to twist my arm and try to come up with a way, you know, to convince me. I think it came down to a feel. It came down to what was in my heart. And I just knew once I was finished with my official visit, I knew I was going to be a Terp.
Christy, I'm interested. You obviously played it, and from your era to now, both on the floor and off the floor, how have you seen the women's game progress? Because obviously you're still so much around it as an analyst and still contributing, and in terms of how it's covered, in terms of how the games are played, there's still progress to be made, but it's got to be so interesting for you to have that experience as a player and then now see these current Terps player, watch all the teams around the country and how the game is sort of treated now. What do you see as the differences there?
I think you have a platform. I think you have, you know, more games on TV. I think that, you know, the exposure is the main thing that has changed for the women's game, just overall in terms of marketing and having more eyes on the game, having more fans at the games. But I think that the spirit of the game is still the same, if that makes sense. Just like the spirit of the men's game, I think, is the same. But the social media piece, where you really get to know the players, I think that as a broadcaster, I love it. You know, I love the stories. I love, you know, if you come from a family of 12 kids, that's intriguing to me. Like, you're going to be a fighter because you have this different kind of background and different dynamic with your family. So I just think that, you know, you get to, you have the vehicle of the internet. You can Google these stories from when they were in high school and find out all about their families and all about their careers as a high school athlete. And I just think for us, had we had social media then, I don't know what it would have been totally different, clearly, but I don't know if we would have been able to handle it because, I mean, and not that it's a tremendous distraction, but I just think we were just about our business, and not to sound arrogant or cocky like that, but I just think, you know, we were just trying to win. We weren't trying to have a mixtape or like, you know, any, you know, bells and whistles. We were like, what time is the game? When do we need to be there? Is my uniform in my locker? Let's go. And it was just kind of a bare bones approach to it. But do I love the exposure that the women are getting today, not just at Maryland, but across the board? I think it's amazing and it's well worth it. And would it have been fun? Absolutely. It would have been fun. Like, you know, but I just think that, you know, we didn't have that. So it was just kind of, you know, we were just right in the trenches with it, blinders on with everything else. And like I said, I didn't even know if we were a one or two seed because it wasn't splashed all over Twitter or whatever. So we just wanted to play together. We wanted to win together, fight together. And I just think that that's the biggest difference, I think, is the exposure of it all. And I do think, you know, just like in the men's game, I think you're seeing a lot more players who are hybrids. I think there's a lot more five out. I think when we played, it was myself and Vicky Bullitt on the blocks. You know, I was more of a finesse player, and I could, you know, stretch a little bit. I was like, the stretch four now is kind of classified as a player who can stretch it out to three. And did I want to take threes? Absolutely. But overseas, I did a little bit. But in college, like, I was a stretch four for that time. And I was like right inside, like heels on the 3-point line, you know, range. But short corner, high post, those are my sweet spots. But Vicky was the power player inside. So she was the five. I was the four. But I was more of a finesse player. But I think now, if I were playing now, I would definitely be a three. And I would definitely have to handle the ball more. I just think that, you know, the game has changed. I mean, you see players in the NBA like Giannis Antetokounmpo playing outside, a seven-footer, and KD and all these guys. And then you see in the women's side, you see Candace Parker, 6'4", like bringing it down, initiating offense. And Elena Deladon, you know, right here in D.C. doing the same thing. Emma Mieseman, you know, letting it fly. So I love that. That you're not relegated to the block, because I didn't really want to be down there, to be honest. I was a rail. So I was, 6'1", 136 pounds coming in as a freshman. So I didn't want any part of, you know, muscles and like anything like that touching me and like ramming into me. I didn't like that. I had the fadeaway and I was out of there. So I just think now to have, you know, more of a wide open five out motion kind of flow to the game, I think it really serves everyone well. And it kind of makes you just want to continue to see that happen. Like when I went overseas, it was the same thing. It's like, it's wide open five out. And I hadn't really been a ball handler at all. So I was like, well, I got to really work hard on how they want me to play over there. So I think it's very international. It's very worldwide in terms of the five out. And I think that's just kind of taken over both genders in terms of how the game is played tactically.
Christy, the first word you used to describe Coach Weller was winner when I asked you. And I think it's safe to say that head coach Brenda Freeze has taken that mindset, taken that legacy, and built upon it. You've really had a front row seat to watch her build her teams, progress, build up the program over this past decade and change, almost 20 years, it seems like, you know, she's been at the helm of this program. How do you describe, you know, Brenda Freeze and what she's meant to Maryland basketball in the time that she's been here?
Oh, man. First of all, if I could go back in time, like, I love Coach Weller and love what she taught us about character and toughness, but I would have loved to play for Brenda Freeze, because I think my first 2 years I got the Spirit Award, because I was the one, if Dina Tate got an and one or something, or Vicky Bullitt got an and one, I'd be the first one, like, right in her face, like, you know, I was like, this is sad. So I just think, you know, I kind of had to hold back a little bit of that, you know, with Coach Weller, because it was just very, hey, get the job done. We don't need any of that, you know, extra. But I think with Brenda Freeze, it's like, I mean, she comes out with Halloween costumes and she's throwing candy. And I'm like, that's me. Like, that's me. That's totally me. So I just think in terms of just, you know, going with the flow of the moment and the emotion and the passion of it and showing that. I mean, Brenda Freeze is just fierce in terms of wanting the best for her team, number one, but also allowing them to show passion the way they want to show it, you know. And not everybody's the spaz. Not everybody's the one that's like in somebody's face on an and one. I mean, and you don't have to have everybody being the same, because that's boring, right? So I think before games, I think some of my teammates didn't want to be around me so much, because I was like, you ready? Let's go. You good? Let's go. Everybody ready? Like, come on, let's go out. Let's get some shots, you know. And they're like, oh my gosh, like, chill out. I was the one getting the, you know, pump the brakes thing. But I just think for her, I just think she has just come in and just done an amazing job, obviously, with going to the Final Fours and winning Big Ten championships and ACC championships before that. I just think that she has a level of expectation. And yes, that was there with Chris Weller and what Maryland presented prior to her coming to College Park. But I just think that, you know, she has served the Maryland community so well in terms of just carrying the torch forward. I mean, there's only been three women's coaches in the history of the program in 50 years time, only three coaches. So, I mean, that just speaks volumes to the integrity of what the program stands for. Number one, with Dottie McKnight coming in before Chris Weller, and then Chris Weller going on a 27-year run. And as you said, you know, Brenda Freeze, almost at 20 years, you know, 18 seasons with the Terps. So I just think that, you know, there's not a miss. Like, you know, when you have, you know, you have your bench players, you know, and they come in and there's no drop off. I mean, Brenda Freeze, as a first year coach at Maryland, came off the bench and boom, came in seamlessly. Like, there was no drop off in terms of expectations, in terms of accountability, in terms of winning mentality. And I mean, just the drive, and you can see it in her. I mean, she is just so fiery. And I get, you know, I'm at the desk, you know, and I watch her, you know, I'm watching the game, of course, but you know, if something happens, I look over at her, and then under the table, I'm getting chill bumps. I'm like, oh, that's like, she's feeling it. Like, she is in the moment with the players at all times, and, you know, feeling every single emotion of what they are doing on the court. Either way, but she's with them, you know, she is with them. And I've seen them, you know, at practices, and it's the same thing. There's just such a, there's a business mindset to it, but there's also a family atmosphere, a family feel. Like, you know, every day, especially now over the last 7 months or whatever, like, we know our families very well, you know, now even more so because we're there all the time. So I think as a team, it's like a family, because you've been, you know, you're with each other every day, you're traveling and you're with each other all the time on the road, and you really get to know one another. But I think in the practices, you really see the comfort of that. And you really see that she has afforded each of the players to be themselves. And I truly appreciate that, and watching her let these young ladies just unfold in front of them with no restrictions, with no hesitation, but just all out. And that just, you know, it proved well last year when they won their last 17 games of the regular season and the championship again in the Big Ten. I just think that whole vibe was, I don't know, it's just what she is all about. And it's just kind of be on task, get the job done, but also be yourself in that moment.
Yeah, I think we've had Brenda on this show before the last three seasons now. And every year, no matter who the personnel is, she's fired up. Like, she is ready to go. High expectations, low expectations, it does not matter. We have to touch on, Christy, you as a player. And I'll just go through the high school stats. You know, no need to brag here. 23, 14, and 6 blocks as a senior, all met player of the year. And when you got inducted into your high school Hall of Fame with one Grant Hill, he said he was just happy to be honored as the male Christy winner. So a pretty nice compliment right there. Describe yourself as a player coming up and where your love for basketball came from.
Oh man, that's such a great question. And, you know, I was like crying when Grant said that, because I was sitting right there and that was a moment. But I think for me, I have an older brother, so we're only 13 months apart. So I basically wanted to do everything he did. And at first it was kind of like to like bother him. Like, I'm going to play too, you know, like, I'm going outside. I know you're meeting with your friends to go play ball, but I'm going to go too. He's like, oh my God, like, come on. I'm going. And then, you know, then I was like, oh, this is fun, you know? And then I was like, oh snap, you know? And then I was getting my shot blocked, you know, like a ton. And then I learned a little shimmy, you know, turnaround jumper. And I started making some shots and they were like, who's going to guard her? And I was like, oh. I like it. So I think that's where I found kind of my my feistiness or my competitive fire, was playing with my brother and his friends on the hoop. We had a hoop in the backyard, people would come over there, but we also had a tree root that was annoying, so there was another house down the road that we played on the driveway of, and had some really good games. And then Twin Branches is an outdoor court out here in Reston, and we always used to play out there, Grant included. And, you know, it was just, you know, there'd be four or five games down and I'd be the only girl there. So I'm like, hey, we have to win, because you're going to be sitting for like an hour before the next game. So it was like really great games. But I just played with a lot of the fellows from around here who played at South Lakes and Flint Hill and all over. So it was, that's where I discovered my love. But I think Cheryl Miller was definitely someone who I watched and admired during that time. She was at Southern Cal. They won back-to-back championships. She was on the Olympic team, but she played with that passion I was talking about, right? So I really think that a lot of the passion that she displayed on the court for her teammates, it wasn't like she's getting an N1 and like, yeah, it's all about me. No. It was her teammates, and she found more joy in that. And I think I kind of attached myself also to Magic Johnson in that regard, not how he played whatsoever, but just the joy that he had seeing his teammates succeed. I think just watching that. So he was like a favorite of mine. I think I had 6 posters of him in my room all over the place. And Patrick Ewing, those are the 3 players who I kind of modeled pieces of my game around. Definitely Cheryl Miller, just her passion, but also like her mid-range game. Like, she didn't miss shots. And then and her passion for her teammates as well, as I said. But then I think from Magic, it was like, you know, he found joy in making plays for his teammates, but he could also score. So I think he was just thrilling to watch. Just, you know, you don't see people open and somehow he just makes this crazy pass and he's like blowing my mind. So it was like just watching him and how he saw the game. I think that kind of did something to me as well. But Patrick Ewing, it was his block shots. Like, no question about it. Like, you know, you said 6 blocks a game. I was going after everything. And I was trying to throw them. I think Grant, matter of fact, was at a game and I got this block. Girl came down the middle. I was like, she's still coming. And then she shot it and I hit it really hard. Like, like a volleyball. Like, I wound up for it. I'll never forget it. And all the boys, like Grant and all the guys, were sitting over there and they were all like jumping up and like walking around and stuff. And I had to pull my jersey because I was like laughing at them. They were like, oh my God. I was like, oh, you guys are so silly. Whatever. But it was, I'd love to block a shot. And I think that passion came from watching Patrick just, you know, just get everything out of there. So, you know, there are parts of their games that, that I really tried to model myself out of. And I even had the shirt that had the shoe on it. I begged my mom to get me that shirt so I could wear it every day at practice. And then my teammates were calling me Patricia because I was like, so love yeah, that. That's definitely where it came from.
Chrissy, you wrap up your playing career at Maryland and you get the opportunity to play overseas, Italy, and then Switzerland. And I'm reading here you average 37 points a game professionally. So first off, is there a Chrissy Winter pro highlight tape we can get a hold of to watch some of these highlights, number one? And number two, I mean, how dominant were you, you know, playing overseas back then in your pro career?
Yeah, first of all, I wish there would be some tapes. I still have friends that I had in contact with from over there. But I don't know if there are any.
We got to pull up some VHSs or something. Where are they?
I got to find something. But yeah, I know before my first pro game in Switzerland, I remember the coach of the team said, hey, meet me for a cafe. It was right by the stadium. It was beautiful, you know, mountainous, beautiful Swiss skyline. And we're sitting out there and he's having a cappuccino. And at the time I didn't drink coffee, but I've since had 3 children. So I have coffee now, but he was sitting there and he was like, yeah, you need to score 40 points. And I'm like, I need to score 40 points. And I think, I don't know if I ever scored more than 30 something. I don't know. And that was like, you know, on like the day we were like in a zone, like it didn't happen. Like every night I'm like 30, it was a lot, but 40, I've never done it. And so I was like, oh, okay. And man, I got out there and every time I got that ball, it was firing. I was shooting that thing. And I ended up with 42 and I don't think I took a free throw because I was like, you know, I was getting fouled though. Don't get me wrong on that. But yeah, I didn't go to the line. So I was just like, I mean, they wanted you to be that aggressive. So it wasn't like I was like ball hugging. It was like, no, our offense is around you. You're getting it. And when you get it, you're shooting. And I'm like, okay. So that's why the numbers were like that. And I think it was like that for all of us over there. The foreigners, we were foreigners over there. So, I mean, if you were an American and you weren't scoring the ball well, you got sent home. That's what it was. So I'm like, I'm staying. So I'm shooting. So that was the 1 year I was averaging like 37. I think on the Italian team, I think I averaged, I don't know, maybe 15 or 16, but that was my first season as a pro over there. And my coach didn't speak any English whatsoever. And it was really tough in that regard. I played with Michelle Edwards and she had played at Iowa, but now she's an assistant with Rutgers. So I see her all the time, but she had been there 3 years. So she knew the language. So she was kind of my interpreter. I didn't have an interpreter or anything. I was just like over there, you know, with no internet, no FaceTime, no creature comforts, no game film, apparently. But it was quite an adjustment. It was like the whole Love and Basketball movie for me. And when I saw that movie, I was like, I mean, no one talked to me, but that was like my entire life story, basically, except for, you know, the baby at the end and the sparks and all that. But the rest of it, that was my life. I mean, you know, I didn't know the language. I didn't. My dad was like, don't go anywhere without your passport. You know, it was scary a little bit outside of basketball, you know, just to be kind of dropped in a different culture, different time zone, different everything. And then not to really be understood, you know, by your coach, and only a couple of players spoke some broken English. You know, they were smoking cigarettes in the locker room after showers. And I was like, what is happening? You know, like a different world. And there were crafts of wine at the pregame meal. They were like, Chris, wine? I'm like, nope. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good. Like, we have a game in like a minute. So it was just a different, different culture. You know, and I was 22, 23 over there. So that was, I'm glad that I did that. But yeah, it's definitely different in terms of style of play and all of that. What I was telling you about being able to put the ball on the floor and all that. And I think my first game in Italy was against Jennifer Azzi's team. She had played at Stanford and came out in 1990 as well. But I remember talking to her after the game and she was like, how's it going? And I was like, it's going. And I said, I know ciao, and that's hello and goodbye. So there's that. So we had a good laugh after the game. We played at her place. So it was fun. And I think, you know, just to be able to share stories like that with players now in the WNBA who basically pick up and go overseas right afterwards. You know, I know things are different now and they have it a little easier and like everything else just in terms of technology. But I still think that, you know, being over there entrenched in a different culture is quite a challenge. I don't care if you have that, you know, that phone or the FaceTime stuff or not, you know, it's still tough, especially these days.
Now you're talking a lot to a lot of those WNBA players in your current role as an analyst doing Mystics, Wizards. We see you at Xfinity Center so many times calling the game on BTN. How fun has that been for you to be an analyst? And then what are some of just the most fun games you've called so far in your time doing it?
Oh man, first of all, it's a dream come true to stay around the game. When we went to the Final Four in 89 at Maryland, Cheryl Miller was actually the analyst on that game for ESPN. And so I was losing my mind in the layup line. I kept looking over there because she was like such an idol of mine. And, you know, I just saw that she was able to stay close to the game. And so I just kind of narrowed everything down. Initially, I wanted to do news. You know, but then I saw Cheryl over there and I was like, you know, the wheels start spinning. I'm like, well, wow, if I could stay close to the game, because I know, you know, her passion was kind of along the same line as mine. Like she, you know, be pushing into her teammates when they made shots for and ones or whatever. And I was kind of like that. So I was like, man, she loves the game and she's found a way to stay connected. And I think for me, that's when I kind of changed exactly what I wanted to do. With broadcasting and with my communications degree. So, I mean, it's just been for me a tremendous blast. I can't even put it any other way. I think, especially, you know, before Maryland went into the Big Ten, I was working with the ACC and I was calling games with them and sidelining during the tournaments and things like that. But I think, you know, just recently, over the last, you know, 6-7 years, just to be able to do, you know, the Wizards shows and games. I just think that it's all the same to me in terms of what it means, if that makes sense. Just the camaraderie piece, the team inside the team, if you will, not the X's and O's per se, but just the whole chemistry and the togetherness of teams. And I think that's what keeps me going and intrigued and pleased, you know, when there is success there. But I think with the Big Ten, I think it's just been amazing. I've done a lot of games, a lot of tournaments, and it's just been a blast. But I would say for Big Ten, my most favorite game to call was the 4-overtime thriller believe it was Michigan State and Indiana in the tournament a couple years ago. And that game, it was like the third of four games of the day. And there was another game coming up behind it. And I don't think it started. That game was supposed to start at like, I don't know, 8:30 or 9. I think it started at 10 something. And we didn't get back to the hotel until, I don't know, well after midnight. And we had to be back, you know, at 9 for the 11 o'clock games the next day. So I would say that was like the most thrilling. Lisa Byington, I know I bruise her arm up a lot because I'm a leaner. I'm down with the headset. So I'm like, I'm leaning and she just laughs at me now. But I think initially she was kind of like taken back by how wiggly I was sitting over there. But, you know, I'm tied down with the headset. I can't stand up and stuff. So plus my legs are long, so I get trapped under the table. It's a bad thing. So I have to do something with myself. So I'm like leaning on her or shoving her or tapping her or grab her hand or something. And she's just like laughing at me or whatever. But what a great partner she has been, a great teammate. But I've learned a lot about her. The Big Ten from her, you know, and when I got in as the first year in the Big Ten, you know, she was really letting me know a lot about the teams, their philosophies and everything. So I'm always grateful for Lisa. And I would say for the Wizards, I would say on the Martin Luther King game a couple seasons ago, I was sitting in between Steve Buckhantz and Phil Chenier. It's Phil Chenier's birthday. And I was like really happy about giving him a little love today. But with that being said, just sitting in between them, I used to watch the Bullets games with my dad. He would always watch them. My dad passed last year, but we would sit and watch the games and, you know, just to see Phil as a player and then, you know, sitting in the living room as a little kid, you know, watching. And then now here I am in between these two. I was like pinching myself before, you know, right before he went on, I kind of looked to the right, looked to the left, and I was just like, wow. So, you know, to be able to not only talk about, you know, women's basketball and be, you know, pigeonholed in that way, but talk about the game and not just basketball, but the game of life and like everything that it encompasses to be a great teammate. I think that has been the most fun. And the Mystics winning the championship last year, I mean, I can't even tell you, I was crying. So after that game, and it wasn't like, it was personal for me because, you know, from day one, you know, I'd seen that team, you know, struggle and try to get it done. And then Mike Tebow came in and I knew he was going to make a big change. And to see him win it, I think I just got like super emotional for him because I'd seen what he's been doing in practice and talking to him all the time. And, you know, I just wanted it so bad for him personally. So I was emotional about that. But I think just seeing the fans being emotional in the stands as the confetti was falling and they were just like beside themselves. And that just took me all the way out because they had been waiting such a long time. So just to be involved in a championship moment like that. And John Wall and Bradley Beal were out there jumping around with the Mystics players and coaches. So I just think just that whole feel is something as a broadcaster that, you know, you just kind of go back to when, you know, you won a championship and you know how that feels, not like on the professional level, obviously, but just in general, like you fought through with like-minded competitors and then you just kind of share in that joy because, and then you reflect back on what that meant for you personally. So for me, I think just staying around it keeps those emotions fresh for me. And I think tactically, you know, I coach high school, so it's like I take a lot of what I learned from broadcasting back to the sideline as a high school coach. So it just kind of all works together. And then being a mom of three teens, I think that, you know, that's a team also. So I just think it all kind of has woven itself together. And it's been quite a ride, to say the least.
Now I have to ask you, Christy, because me and Keith, we both do social media stuff here at Maryland. And one of my most consistent likes on whatever sport it might be is your Twitter. You seem to love Maryland just in general, not just Maryland women's basketball. You are following everything. How much does this place mean to you?
Oh man, I'm talking about crying. You're going to make me cry. I mean, when you're 18 and you don't really know a lot about yourself, at that point, you think you do, but you really don't. But just looking back now, those 4 years, and you know, they always say like from 0 to 5 years old, those are your formative years. Okay, I agree. All right, I get it. But I tell you what, from 18 to 22, those are also your formative years. And
no doubt.
In a lot of ways, you're away from home, you're tested, you're held accountable, you are, you don't have any downtime, and you've got to get the job done. And I think, you know, I grew up so quickly during that time, and that's not a complaint. That is a statement made with a tremendous amount of gratitude. I'm glad that I went through the trenches with the people I went through the trenches with. And it's something that I will always cherish and treasure. And for me, I think the biggest thing that I learned about myself is that I can do it if you keep going. And there are the tears.
Taylor, you succeeded. Taylor,
there it
you
is.
Succeeded.
There it is.
Christy cried.
That was our goal the whole time, Christy. So you check that out.
But I think just, you know, I always say to people now, keep going, because it's not always easy, but it's always worth it. So it's, you're not going to have the answers. And sometimes it's confusing, especially these days, right? We don't know the answers to a lot of things, but I think if you can, you know, persevere, even without knowing for sure if that full on effort is going to pay off. But then when you see it does pay off, then that's when you share your experiences with others. And so that's what I'm most grateful for.
Very well said.
I made it. Almost.
So, Christy, I need you to put your analyst cap back on, because one question we've been asking a lot of Maryland basketball men's alumni is just their all-time. We've had a record breaker series going on for the past couple of weeks. Their all-time Maryland starting five on the men's side. So now we need to start the trend with you. I need your all-time Maryland women's basketball starting five.
Oh boy! All time. Okay. All right. Oh boy. All right. I'm running through like how many names in my head right now, like 1,000. I've got to start. We're going to build around Vicky Bullitt, just because, listen, she's a 2-time Olympian, and I played with her, and games were easy because I was, you know, practicing against her every day for 3.5 hours. So Vicky Bullitt is definitely the five. At the four, let's go with Crystal Langhorn at the four, the lefty, you know, she's tough in there on the glass, shot 67%. Okay. And then at the three, Alyssa Thomas, that's easy. Easy peasy. I mean, that's the A train. That's baby. I'm not leaving her off, even though she should have made a league team this year. I will say that she didn't make first or second team. That was a travesty. Not because I didn't vote for her. I voted for her. But anyway, She's amazing. So
she is an incredible player.
I mean, come on. And she wasn't even 100% with her shoulders. I could go on and on about that. But anywho, Alyssa Thomas at the three, and now it gets dicey because there's so many great guards. Oh my geez. I mean, Dina Tate was an All-American. You know, she had 30 in the Texas game when we won and went to the Final Four, and was, I mean, ridiculous against Tennessee in the Final Four, like just phenomenal. Oh my gosh. But then Christy Tolliver, Tolliver is just nasty. Like, oh, like she, the pullback, the step back. Yeah. Okay. Should we just do those two?
I mean, that's a pretty solid team.
That's a pretty solid team right there.
We're spanning all generations too. This is not just a my generation squad. You've got, you know, a little bit of the new school. We've got a little bit of the old school.
Yeah.
The new. I mean, Kyla Charles, I love. But she would be the three, so I can't. Alyssa Thomas, and so. Okay, how about this? We're gonna put Dina Tate at the point guard. Because, I mean, she'd be killing people over at Leonardtown. We'd be playing against the football player. Dropping them, man. You're talking about you want some film, man. There was YouTube and all the Twitter and stuff. That would be a GIF, whatever thing. Breaking people off, like, ridiculous. Dina Tate. And then Tolliver at the two. I feel like I'm forgetting people, but I'm going with Tolliver at the two because she can shoot it and score, and Dina would find her.
Like, and now you have two players that can initiate, and Alyssa Thomas can play point forward. I mean, you got everyone can handle the ball.
I mean, and boards, like Vicky's going to board, Lang's boarding, Thomas is boarding. Come on. And first of all, I had to, a story about Deanna Tate. I got busted in the head as a freshman because I was wide open. Right. But I didn't think I was open. It was almost like the Magic Johnson thing. Like, oh, you don't see what's happening. And, I mean, I think I got my hand up, but it, you know, ricocheted, but I was saving myself rather than trying to actually catch it. Cause I saw the ball. I was like, oh, like I'm open. Oh, okay. So I had to always be aware when Deanna had the ball, just to be ready for a catch. And so I learned a lot, quickly with her, but, yeah, Tolliver can flat out score. I just think those are the right now. And I know, and Marissa Coleman, Shea Duran, I feel you. I mean, there's so many.
Laura, it's a tough question.
I mean, there's a great bench. We would have a great bench, like Laura Harper and all, you know, some great players behind. But I don't know. Like, I think that's my final. I'm gonna stick with it. I'm not going to move anybody.
I don't think too many people can argue with that stuff.
I don't think so either. The only person that it hasn't been hard for on the men's side was Anthony Count, who just picked all his friends. Christy, we'll get you out of here in a little bit of rapid fire. First, your favorite game of your career.
Favorite game of my career, I would say the Texas game at Texas when we won to go to the Final Four. And it wasn't my like best game statistically. I don't care. I'm going with that one because, you know, we cut nets and we broke their 34 game home win streak to go to the Final Four that season. And that was sweet. So that one.
Christy, how about the music artist you're listening to right now?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever my kids turn on the car is like pretty bad. No, I need to sit and do more music, you know, but if I pop on something,
It sounds like the kids are dominating the
kind of how it goes, right? I guess
change, but I try, you know, everything has been taken away, so I try to give them, you know, what they need for music and selections and let them choose things. Let's see, I'm gonna go with Beyonce. I mean, she just
good choice,
tried and true.
Have new things out right now, but I don't care, like anything that she's singing, I'm like bopping my head to that. So yeah.
The TV show you watched during quarantine or streamed?
Oh man. See, I don't do the Netflix and all that, but I do watch all the shows on OWN.
Like, there you go.
Scary shows. Have and the Have Nots and Haves and the Have Nots. And then what was the other one? Greenleaf. I was watching that one until the season ended. I was sad about it, but yeah, anything on OWN, I'm watching that.
All right, Chrissy, important question here. Yes or no. Can the kids beat you in hoops yet?
Wait, can they hear me? I mean, yes.
That day is coming.
Can they guard the fadeaway? That's really is
no. They found the fadeaway. You know, especially the younger one. You know, he's, you know, just about 6 foot, but he tags my arm, and I'm like, hey, you tagged my arm? No, I didn't. But the shot went in, though. You know, like that's an end one. So we have a hoop out front here. So I had to buy that because we were never at home. So I got that like in April. And, you know, thought we'd be back doing things way before now, but, it's served us well. And there've been some great tournaments out front with the three teenagers, but now my older son's 6'8", so I'm messing with him and he's like 220 something. And like, I told you, I didn't want all that. Right. When I told you,
that's right.
So I don't want any parts of the block, but, Brianna, she actually committed to play at Georgetown. So she is kind of one of those.
Oh, wow. Congrats to her.
And is kind of one of those stretch fours, but she's actually a 3-point shooter, but she has a little bit of a handle too. And I purposely wear my sandals when I play outside and I'm like, oh, I would have gotten you if I had my shoes on, but I had my sandals on. So that's why, but I'm like, yeah, I don't mess with them too much anymore.
And then finally, we ask this to everyone that comes on the show, your favorite place to eat in College Park.
Oh, wow. My favorite place to eat in College Park. Well, it used to be, I don't know if is Ratzy's still there. It was on the corner.
Ratzy's is gone.
It's yeah.
Well, that was my favorite little treat place. I would get wings, but like when I was a student there, that was like my little treat spot. Oh, now, when I go back, it's Marathon Deli.
Oh yes.
Yes. And then, and the Jerk Pit.
Yes.
Pitt is good.
It's very good.
Taylor and I made our first trip there. Was it last winter, Taylor? Last spring?
Yeah. Last winter.
We had gotten so many recommendations. Like, all right, we got to go. We keep asking this question. We haven't been there.
So those are the ones. And then I just found out about the Gus's Fried Chicken. Last year.
Yes, we have also been there.
And that's pretty good too. But the Jerk Pit or Marathon Deli, when I'm calling games, I'll grab some and take it home.
both tremendous choices. Christy Winter Scott, thank you so much for coming on with us to celebrate a little Maryland women's basketball, go down memory lane. We appreciate it so much and can't wait to see you back at Xfinity Center sooner rather than later. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Christy. Back here on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota. Awesome stuff from Christy Winter Scott. Appreciate her. As you said, Keith, we could have gone 3 hours with her. I don't think she had 3 hours, but she gave us a ton of her time as we talked about Maryland women's basketball. We will continue this series as we go through this women's basketball season. Obviously, we'll have the current players. I'm sure we'll have Brenda Fries on at some point on this show. We pretty much have her every year, so that would not be out of the ordinary. But if you're a listener and you have someone from Maryland women's basketball's past that you think would be an awesome interview, let us know who you would like to hear from. Obviously, we are going to go through and try to get the names that you know, the Tollivers, Chris Tolliver, we've had on this show already,
that's right,
the Marissa Colemans, the Vicky Bullets, all these different people. And we know those big names, but if there's anybody you think, you know, beyond, and even the heavy hitters, tell us which heavy hitters you want the most. We want to make sure we're giving you the women's basketball players you want to hear from. So send us, drop us a note.
Tweet at us. Maybe a comment on Instagram, Taylor. However, you got, I think you can send us an email at heartheturtle@umd.edu. Get to us that
email you can definitely go on. And you can maybe try to send us a message through, I don't know, the One Maryland app. Well, maybe you can't, but there's a lot of different other things you can do on the One Maryland app, Keith. You can play Terps Game Day Pick'em. You can play Terps Trivia. You can get all your scores and news and videos and everything you want from the One Maryland app. I almost called it the Keith Snedden app, to be totally honest with you, but it's the One Maryland app, and make sure to download it. Make sure to also follow us on all of our social media channels, and that's where you can get in touch with us, Keith, at Hear the Turtle on Twitter, at Hear the Turtle on Instagram. Sneds311 for Keith Snedden, and you can follow me at TaylorSmite10, and we will see you next time on Hear the Turtle.
Go Terps!